My name is John McCall. I'm 48 years old. Today is Saturday, May 4th, 2019. With StoryCorps Atlanta, and I'm here with my mother.
My name is Geneva Hurley McCall. I'm 78 years old. Today's date is Saturday, May 4th, 2019, and I'm here at StoryCorps Atlanta, and John is my son.
You know, one of the things that stuck with me when I went to college is I was in a class and my professor asked me about how did I get here? How did I end up at this university and in this classroom? And I remember that my answer to him was that I can't ever remember a time when it wasn't such that I wasn't going to be here, that it seemed always a part of my pathway that I would end up in someone's college or someone's university. But I imagine that for you, your answer would have been quite different, and your experience would have been quite different.
My experience was entirely different from yours. Although I grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia, which was the home of the University of Virginia, a great college started by Thomas Jefferson, I thought about college, and I knew a few people other than teachers who had gone to college, but no one in my family had ever graduated from college. I do remember that two persons had gone to college, but they did not graduate from college, and I became the first person to graduate from college. My educational journey was difficult. I grew up in Charlottesville, which was located in the South, deep South. South, where everything was segregated, all the schools, the hospitals, the stores, all of those things were segregated, as well as the school system. As you know, I grew up on 12th Street, and the next street over was the street where the white sections of town began. And my house, the backyard of my house, was also the beginning of the schoolyard for Venable School. So if you could look at it like this, I could have gone to Venable in 2 minutes, but I had to walk 2 miles to get to Jefferson School. I have always loved learning, and I always loved school. If I couldn't go to school, some days I'd cry. My mother would have to tell me, "You're sick and you can't go." But I would always want to go, and I always had a quest for learning. And I also knew that all that was offered to me was not the same as what was offered to children in white schools. Daily, I could go over to Venable School, which was next door to my house, and look in the windows and see what was available for white students. They had all of the lovely furniture and books galore and pictures all over their walls, and everything just looked new and bright and pretty. And then when we went to Jefferson School, everything was used older, because we got all of the furniture and all that kind of things when the white students got new things in their classroom. But the one thing that always troubled me was all of those new books, and I always wanted to be able to read in a new book. And all of my young career in school growing up, I never had a new book, because back in those days, African-American children were given books that were used by white students. When white students got new books, we got their old books. And I always had trouble with that because, number one, the books were 4 or 5 years. Oh, Lord. They were 4 or 5 years behind our books. There never were any people in the books that looked like us. The books always smelled moldy because they were stored, I think, in damp rooms. The eyes would be punched out of people. The words would be gone. All kinds of derogatory words would be written in books. And there never were enough books. We didn't have an extensive library at the school, because I could look in the library at Venable School and see all of the things that were in their library. And I think for all of my educational journey, I wanted to have a new book. In my school, there would be three or four children sitting together because our chairs were screwed down to the floor and we had to go in and out of the row. And you would have maybe three children sitting on a row because most of our classes were 35, 40 children in a class. And there might be one book and all three of us who were sitting on a row would have to look out of the same books. And of course you came to the problem of no eyes in the people, derogatory words written in the book, words like, hey nigga. And there would be monkeys drawn in the books and all kinds of derogatory things. And as a result, in my school, we did a lot of oral learning. Our teachers wrote 5 and 6 boards of work each day. And that's why I always tell you I have a wonderful handwriting, because we had to write, 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 and write. All of the time we had to write everything. And we did a lot of oral recitations. I still remember right to this day a poem that I learned in the fourth grade in 1946. I think that I still remember. I think that I should never see a poem as lovely as a tree. A tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breath. I recite that a lot because that was taught to me by Ms. McGinnis, who was my favorite teacher. And she was my favorite teacher because Ms. McGinnis was one of the first few teachers that I had in the beginning who was a college graduate. Most of my teachers went to college, but they might not have a degree. They might have gone for a year or two. And that was all right. That was the norm back in the day in the 40s when I started to go to school. My school, Jefferson Elementary, was a 8-room brick school. It had 8 classrooms. It had a principal's office. It did not have a cafeteria. It had a room in the basement where we could go and get milk or whatever. It did not have an auditorium. But when I went to look into Venable School, Venable had an auditorium, they had a gymnasium, they had many, many more rooms than we had at Jefferson. They had all of the conveniences, and it always worried me about why we couldn't have the same things that all the white children had. But of course, I had been taught at an early age about segregation and what would be offered to African-American students and what was offered to white students. Although I, at an early age, also knew that the law said that there was equal, separate but equal. But I will certainly say that the only thing equal about my school and about Venable School was the picture of Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson's picture was in all of the schools in Charlottesville, Virginia, because he was such a famous person who founded the University of Virginia, and he also had lived in Charlottesville, Virginia. Other than that, I can't think of anything that was equal, separate but equal, in those two school systems. Black schools, African-American schools, were given less money. The teachers were given less pay. And we were never given anything new, but I always dreamed about getting a new book.
Did you ever get that book? Did you ever get new books?
I got that book much later on, and I'll tell you some things in between getting that new book. I want to say that I don't think I lacked in education because I had some strong teachers, teachers who were dedicated to teaching and doing the best for you with what they had. They, as I said, taught us a lot of oral things, and they told us about things that were happening in African-American communities, and they told us about some African-American persons who were well-known, like Phyllis Wheatley and George Washington Carver and Booker T. Washington. In fact, Miss McGinnis, who graduated from Hampton Institute, knew Booker T. Washington because he also was a graduate of Hampton Institute. And they taught us, they were strong teachers. They kept our faith. They never told us that we could not do what other people were doing. And frankly, I remember when I was very young, I decided that I knew that I was smart. I could always had a very good memory, and I remembered things, and I do a lot of remembering. When I would read something, I would remember. And I always had a feeling about books. And we had some books at home that Mama and Dad had brought home from some of the people that they worked for or that somebody had loaned us or had told us about. Our teachers taught us things that the Board of Education didn't approve of teaching us, but we never discussed those things, you know, in the presence of any kind of white. When the white persons who were in charge of schools came around, there was never a picture in the room of an African-American person. They were just pictures of the ones that they had approved of. There were no books in the rooms that told anything about African-American people or any contributions that they had made to society. I grew up knowing that there were persons who did make strong contributions to society. As you know, I have always been interested in studying African-American history, and Miss McGinnis, my fourth grade teacher, was the person who started me on that journey. And I have been on that journey ever since I was a small child. You know, I'm always doing something about African-American history. When I grew up, Jefferson School only went through the third grade, and when you got to the fourth grade, you had to go over to the high school. The first part of the high school was for fourth, fifth, and sixth grade children, and the back of the school was for high school. That did not happen in the white high schools. They had separate schools. And let me tell you a little something about that. Even though the school did not look like the white schools. White schools, all the white schools in Charlottesville were built on the, they were built similar to the buildings that were at the University of Virginia. They had real high steps, at least 20 or 25 steps to get into each one of those buildings. They had lots of classrooms, as I've said. They had big play yards and all of those things. But I decided very early in my life it was not the building that was going to determine my fate, because I had great expectations for myself. And our teachers told us that we were as good as anybody else. My parents told me that every day. My mama told me that I was just as good as anybody else and I could do some of the same things, but it was because of the laws that I had to do these things separately. I went through elementary school, and I did very well. I did extremely well. I made honor roll all the time in elementary school and also in high school. And when I went to high school, the same thing follows. We did not have any new books, new furniture, although we moved into a new school. A school was built for African-American children who lived in the city and who lived in the county in 1953, and I went to school in 1953 to Burley High School. And I remember to this day when the principal came into my room when I was, and it was, the year was 1954 when he came in, was in May 17th, when he came into the room and told us that the decision had just come down from the Supreme Court. The law of the land that there was to be segregation in school was no longer the law. And I remembered as this, it was yesterday that I said, oh Lord, now I'm gonna get me a new book. That was 1954. I did not get a new book until 1956. Mm-hmm. I was in the 10th grade of high school. I had not seen a book. And the funny thing is about that book, when I got that new book, I was disappointed still because there were no people in the book that looked like me. There were no stories in the book that looked like me. My family didn't go through the things that those families went through. There was no identification. And I said to myself, this is what I have wished for all of my life, to have a new book. And it still did not move me any further along than having used those old books. I thought about the same thing about the books that I had in elementary school, because we had Dick, Jane, and Sally. Oh, look, 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 look. Look at Dick, look at Jane, look at Sally. All of those persons didn't look like me. My dad didn't put on a suit every day and drive to work. We didn't have a car until I graduated from college. My mother didn't walk around in a pretty apron because she had left home early before we went to school to go to her day work job. There was no Sally, no Puff, and no Dick and Jane, none of those characters. Everybody was out of the house and gone, and everybody came back in the evening. But in spite of all of that, not having the proper equipment and books and all of those things, I still felt successful because I continued to make the honor roll and to be involved in a lot of things and have a strong ambition that I knew I was going to college. How I was going to go, I don't know. My mother and father finished the 11th grade of high school because that was as far as they were allowed to go. White students could go to the 12th grade, but they did not have 12th grade for African-American students. Nobody had ever graduated from college. My sister had gone, but she had not finished. I didn't know where the money was going to come from because you had to have some kind of money. And frankly, the household that I grew up in, my parents, we lived check by check in a wonderful home. I had a wonderful childhood, but I didn't know where that money was going to come from in order for me to go to school. And I had been told that I should strive to go to college. And when I got to the 12th grade, I finished in the top 10 of my class. I was number 6 in my class. And I had done studying for such a long, 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 long time. And through hard work and some grants and some loans, I was able to go to college, and I finished college. And then I started on my next journey. I wanted to go to the University of Virginia. I had grown up in Charlottesville. I knew about the University of Virginia. I knew they had not always accepted African-American students. There had been a lot of sadness on the part of African-American people because they were not allowed to go there. But I still had that dream that that's where I wanted to go. In the state of Virginia, Virginia paid African-American persons who wanted to go and receive an advanced degree to go out of the city. They would pay you to go to a place like Columbia. They would pay you to have room and board, buy all your books, give you money for food and everything, if you just told them that you would not apply to a white school like William & Mary, University of Virginia, University of Richmond. And it was still in effect in 1963 when I went to the University of Virginia, but I just wanted to go. And it was cheap. It only cost $100 a summer to go to UVA, and $100 was exactly what I could get together to go to school.
So you mean they would pay you to go someplace else?
Pay you to go to a school out of state. as long as you did not apply to any of those schools that had graduate programs that were white, like William and Mary, University of Richmond, University of Virginia, and the people who got, the teachers who got masters before me, all went to Columbia or somewhere out, or they went to Howard, they would go to Howard or whatever. As long as you didn't apply for any school that was white. But my journey, I was admitted to the University of Virginia in 1963. It was just beginning to integrate in the education department. They had taken people in to law department and like that, and medical schools, because there had been big suits filed against them, and you know, those person had won. But I was accepted on a temporary basis. I had to take 3 courses until they decided whether or not I was capable of doing the work. It was an experience that I shall not forget, because I didn't have anybody who was on my side who was white when I was in the University of Virginia. But I prayed every day and I read every day, and I'm glad I had a good memory, because I could memorize all those chapters that we had to read, because I knew every day, I was going to be called on 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 times to answer a question. And I think the reason was is that it wanted to show that I did not know. I did not know how to respond to questions or answers. The story had a wonderful ending. I passed all of the tests that was required of me, and in 1967, I graduated from the University of Virginia. Six blacks in the School of Education out of 630-some graduations. You probably want to hear the story I tell you about University of Virginia, because I have told it so many times. I was proud to graduate from the University of Virginia. But I set my diploma and I put it up in my closet. But the thing that I was most proud of was that on that day in Charlottesville, Virginia, we had a newspaper called the Daily Progress. And they always, on graduation day, published the names of the hometown graduates. And true, on this day, 1967, my mother and father were written in that paper as Mr. and Mrs. And that was the highlight of my life, that I could see my mother and see my father's name in that paper as Mr. and Mrs., because that was not done in Charlottesville. My mother and father received a lot of slack for having their name in the paper, because they worked at a country club, you know there. And they served a lot of very rich people, the Johnsons, the Kennedys, and all those. And everybody went to the country club on the day of the graduation. And I think I've told you this story about one of the guests at the country club told my mother that she was not going to be at the country club the next day because she was going to graduation at the University of Virginia. She told that story to my mother at least 5 or 6 times, and Mama said she finally got tired of hearing it, you know. So she told her, "Miss Reed, I won't be here tomorrow either." She said, "Well, what are you going to be doing, Geneva?" My mother's name was Geneva. And she said, "I'm going to the University of Virginia graduation." Well, Miss Reed had told Mama that her son was getting his bachelor's degree. She said, "What are you going up there for?" And so my mother said, "I'm going to see my daughter who's graduating, and she's receiving a master's degree." The lady stopped speaking to my mother. My daddy didn't get any tips. There was a lot of slack that they got on their job, because here was a waiter and here was a lady who just poured water in glasses and dust off the crumbs on the table, had been able to send their child to college, because nobody at Farmington other than the black employees knew that I had ever graduated from Virginia State. And I think a lot about that now, that in my quest for an education, there were a lot of stumbling blocks in my way. but I never did let them overcome and say what I wasn't going to be able to do. I had a lot of support from a grandmother who I shall never forget when she borrowed $500 on her house so that she could pay my tuition to go back to college after my mother and father were in the hospital and my grandfather had just died. I didn't know until later on that she had put up her house to get $500. And she did that because she said to me, I was the one. I was the one who had to break the cycle and go to college and to finish and to come out of college and promise her that I would help all the others that came behind me, not and then help those who were not necessarily relatives. I became the first one to graduate from college, and I also was the first person in my family to receive a graduate degree. It meant a lot to me to get it from Charlottesville, because from the University of Virginia, because there were a lot of people who told me that I could do well. In fact, when I was growing up, I remember in the neighborhood, all of our neighbors would ask to see your report card, the day you got a report card, and they would say to me, they didn't call me Geneva, you know, they called me Poochie. And they said, Poochie, you're going to be able to do something good in there because you do so good in school. Don't ever give up. And they might well give me a nickel or a dime, or sometimes somebody gave you a quarter. And I say right now that I would not take anything for my educational journey. I realized that I was denied a lot, and sometimes I wonder about what it would have been like if I had started out with all new books and I didn't have to struggle and try to figure out some things that maybe you could have read about in a book, or how the journey would have been. But I will say this, that I would not take anything for my journey. I think back a lot to all of the insults and everything we did just because we were going to school. I think back to the time I had to walk to Jefferson School every day, the 2 miles, and then we had to walk back home every day and be confronted with white children who were riding on the bus, and we were walking, and they were hollering out the window, hey, nigga, don't you want to ride? And all of the trash that they threw on us, and all of the names that they called us, I just wonder, would it have been indifferent, or would I have appreciated it more than what I appreciated? And I always wonder about the lady, one of the professor's wife from the University of Virginia, who said to her child, when her child told her that I said I wanted to go to the university, she said to her child, hell will freeze over before that nigga will go to the University of Virginia. It would have been nice that day to find her and tell them that they did not let me in there any different from the way that they let any white student in there. I had to struggle and push and do things on my own because I didn't have any professors to help me. I did all those things on my own, but I think it taught me and it made me a strong person. A strong person, and it made me to continue on to do postgraduate work also. I'm proud of my journey. I'm proud of the people who were in my life, who very early in my life recognized that I was able to do stuff, was able to do, and I remember saying to myself, this does not have anything to do with white people. God has given me this brain. And I am going to use it and not disappoint the people in my community and not disappoint God. My story.
So I guess it's not like I was telling my professor that it just happened. I didn't just end up there, you know. For me, it may have seemed that way because you went to college and Dad went to college, that it was just given that I was just there.
And you must remember, too, on your dad's side, your grandpa who had been born in the 1890s and who lived in a house with ex-slaves, had managed to graduate from college. He taught in a college. And so it was always expected that you were going to go to college from the day you were born. You just didn't go to the college that I wanted you to go to, but you did go to college. And it's because of my educational journey that you were able to do that.
Yeah, I think it was really a lot to do with your experience with going and Dad's experience with going. It was made such that it was a given for me, but it wasn't something that just happened.
No.
Listening to what you're saying and what you went through, it wasn't something that just happened. It was a
divine plan.
It was a plan.
It was a divine plan, and it was a plan that was never given up, even when I met obstacles. Anytime I had an obstacle, I tried to overcome it, and I never wavered on wanting to go to college. Even when I graduated from high school and my mother said, I don't know, I said, I'm not giving up. I'm going, irregardless of how I was going to be. And I did sacrifice a lot. I didn't have everything that I would have liked to have had, but my grandmama told me that it was going to be all right, and that one day I would be able to do all of those things that I had wished for, and she was telling the truth.